I'm a genuine alcoholic.
Yay.
Oh my God, I'm exhausted. This is the section where it's like, if your eyes close and you pass out, don't worry. I know you're meditating. I remember the name of that book I was thinking of about the finance. It was called Money Drunk, Money Sober. And I wondered if it was even still out there. So I went on Amazon before, and it's still out there. Money Drunk, 90 Days to Financial Freedom. And for whatever reason, and I'm sure there's a million and one books like that out there now, that was a book that really helped me back in the day get some financial freedom to my situation, because how reckless I was spending money. So I was just thinking, I don't know what I'm going to talk about right now. We'll see what God's going to bring, because I feel like I just... you know, we talked about daddy, we talked about mommy, we talked about, adversities. We all have adversities. We're all going to have a turn in a barrel. We're all going to go through something in recovery. I know that, and just my own experience of, going through all that surgery I've been through, and probably will still go through a lot more. I just had back surgery last Friday. I go in for a procedure every year. They take all my nerves out of my back. Gives me complete relief, and then as the months go on, I start, my nerves regenerate back to the joint. So that's going to be an ongoing process. But thank God I got that process to feel relief. During COVID, I came down with an autoimmune disease, and out of the clear blue, and it's called vitiligo. I don't know how many people are familiar with that. Losing all the pigmentation in my face. I don't know if you could see it, my scalp. After I had my fifth vaccination, I guess it boosted my immune system. I guess it was dormant inside of me. And my daughter has it. And after that fifth one, I was out. I was in Oregon, really. And I'm looking in the mirror. I'm like, what's wrong with me? And all of a sudden, I could see all like the color of my skin and my face leaving. And it's not a death sentence. There's no cure for it, but it's a vanity issue, right? And even though I'm 68 years old, and you always care how you feel and look, it's something that just like, what the fuck? Like, why me? Why me? And I guess it's just my turn in the barrel when it comes to that stuff too. So like anything else, whether it's death, whether it's money problems, whether it's relationship problems, whatever it is, you learn how to deal with it. You learn how to deal with by talking about it and bringing it to God and praying on it. I opened up the session the other night, last night, seems like 3 days ago, and Bill Grace, the guy that took me through the book first time, his two goals, the goals of Alcoholics Anonymous, goals that I've come to believe is really, really my goals too. The first one, the obvious one, don't pick up the first drink. All right, check. How do you do that? Well, we know how to do that. We go to meetings, we get a sponsor, we work the steps, on and on and on. But the second goal is a goal we all want to attain. Now, that's to step out in the sunlight of the Spirit. And like I said the other night, there it is. Right out that door, guys. But the problem is we've got a bunch of these chairs, tables, they're all against the door. And what we're going to have to do is take harmonious action as a group to get out that door by taking these things out of the way and be able to walk out into complete freedom. Right? But what's going to prevent me from going out there? Well, I think it's one thing we don't talk about a lot. It's this. The thinking mind, the crux of the problem, as that book talks about, right? And I've said it a few times, and maybe some of you guys are, maybe you younger guys, maybe you old, maybe you never heard that before, that alcoholism doesn't come in a bottle, it comes in my mind, right? If booze is just a symptom to my problem, what's my real problem? It's this thing, right? And this thing is filled with a bunch of delusions and distortions, and, it's amazing, and I'll bring up some instances or some examples of that, of how my mind really works and how my mind really doesn't want to be out there in the freedom. My mind, for some reason, likes to suffer. My mind likes to do things on my own. My mind doesn't want me to ask you for help. My mind just tells me, pull up your bootstraps and, like a real man and just do the job yourself, that kind of stuff. Asking for help is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in Alcoholics Anonymous because of my pride, my ego. Bill talks about in How It Works, it's probably the most read piece of literature we have. You know, millions of meetings are opening up today. You know, we're reading chapter 5, how it works. We get to that one paragraph, right? The paragraph that Bill writes specifically for Dr. Bob. That some of these we bought. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result is nil until we let go. Absolutely. Why can't I let go at times? Why do I resist change? Why do I not want to do what you guys are doing? I see how free you are. I see how happy you are. Why am I not willing to go out that door into complete freedom? And I believe it comes down to one word, a word that will kill more alcoholics than a resentment. And that word is called pride. See, my pride is the essence of self-centeredness. And as we know, when we read about pride in the seventh step in the 12 and 12, it's the thing that leads to the procession of all my other character defects. And pride will always step in to its rightful place when I'm in spiritual stagnation. And what that looks like is, here, God, here's the drink problem. I'm going to handle the rest of my life. And as a result of that, you know, I got a mind that thinks I can control and manage life to my liking. I got a good friend out in St. Louis, Harold Long. Maybe some of you guys know Harold. You know, Harold's a pastor, a member of AA. He doesn't mind me saying that. Harold wrote a book during the pandemic. You know, he called me up and he said, hey, listen, I wrote this manuscript and I'm going to send it to you. I want you to read it. We're going to do a workshop on it. I'm like, okay, I had no idea what he was talking about. Next minute, I get an email. There's about 50 pages of material. And at the time, the material was called The 5 Big Delusions. He's now changed it to Overcoming the Delusions of Alcoholism. And believe me, there's a lot of delusions we all have in our minds about a lot of things. But he specifically wrote about these 5 delusions. And he said, we're going to do a workshop on Zoom in Scotland. I'm like, oh, great. So I go, when are we doing this? A couple of weeks ago? No, tomorrow. So that night I had to read these 50 pages and just make up crap, I guess, when I was, you know. And so, you know, we do this thing in Scotland. You know, I can't understand anyone from Scotland. They're asking, it's a Q&A. I'm asking Harold, what did he say? And Harold's a hillbilly from St. Louis. I can't understand him either. So it was really comical. But, man, it opened my mind to how my mind operates, you know. So some of the things that we talked about in this workshop was how do we unpack the delusions that are in our mind? Because all of us are so driven at times, whether we see it or we don't see it, by the thinking mind. So the first thing we talked about is this unrelenting voice in my head that says, I'm not enough. Anyone else in here ever feel like that? I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not rich enough. I'm not blank enough, right? And how that unrelenting voice just keeps going sometimes. And when that unrelenting voice is like that for a guy like me, well, that means I'm really not worthy of anything, right? I'll walk my way out of anything. I'll walk my way out of any experience. So this thing, this voice, this is the thing I grew up with. This is the thing my old man would say to me, you're not going to amount to anything. You know, you're stupid. You know, you're stupid. How many times can a 7-year-old hear you're stupid before you think you're stupid? I mean, I'm not trying to be therapeutic here, but, you know, you just get that constant barrage of negativity in your life, and you're told these things. Well, I don't know about you, but I've come to believe some of that stuff, you know. Whether it's true or not, I just believe deep down there's something defective inside of me, right? Second thing we talked about is, you know, and this is one of the things that a lot of people have trouble with when they come in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and really acknowledge their disease. I'm not an alcoholic. You know why? Because I equate my alcoholism circumstances. That's why. And if you're anything like me, you drank too if you had my old man. You drank too if you lived in a neighborhood I lived in. You drink too if you had this or that or no education. You drink too. You know, we always have an excuse for our drinking. You know, I always think of that great story in a book, you know, Jim the car salesman, right? How does he always have, what was the excuse he used for taking a drink? Well, I'm going to take it on a full stomach. I'm going to put a shot of whiskey in the milk and I'll take it on a full stomach. I'll be good. How many of us have taken that shot of whiskey in a milk on a full stomach and used that as a trivial excuse why I'm getting hammered today? So this idea that I'm not alcoholic, yeah, maybe I take a little bit too many drugs. Yeah, I can agree with that. But this idea that, you know, that I'm not an alcoholic is one of the great delusions. It prevents many people from walking in that door right there. And how many people do you know that have walked out that door? You know, we always used to say that thing, welcome to everyone in their first 90 days. Well, welcome to everyone in their last 90 days, because those people don't know they're, you know, walking out of AA one judgment at a time, right? So the last thing is this victimization thing, you know, oh, not the last thing, but this delusion of victimization. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. You know, I talked a little bit about that, you know, for those who are familiar. If you're not familiar, you know, the book lays out a four-column inventory, right? Column one, who do I resent? Dad. Second column, what's the cause? Here it is. I'll give you 20 things. Third column, how does this affect my, you know, my pride, my self-esteem, my security, my pocketbook, my sex, you know? How does that stuff affect me? And when you harm me, when you hurt me, I'm walking around with a lot of information, right? It has to be his fault the way I feel. So my ego likes to, you know, free room and board, just sit in that third column and play the role of the victim, you know? And how many people do I know? Maybe there's some in this room right now with double-digit sobriety, and it's still not your fault, right? And that doesn't mean not bad, and I'm not condoning bad behavior or things that might have been done to you, but how many of us are sitting in here and holding on to stuff that really serves no purpose, right? I'm not willing to let it go. It's my only ammunition, right? So I'm not willing to let go, and I play the role of the victim. You know, this one delusion, a lot of, you know, the delusion of impossibility sounds like this. Why try? Why try? Why don't you go back to college, Jim? Why? I'm 68 years old. Why would I go? 67 years old. I don't even know how old I am. 67 years old. Right now, I don't even know where I am right now. But 67 years old. Why go? Guys, I can't tell you how many times I pull out my little drawer, my office, my little desk, and I pull out those transcripts from college. I'm 54 credits away from a degree. And I say, why don't I just go back to school? I'm retired. I can go to community college and finish this thing. But why try? The delusion of impossibility. Why ask for a promotion on the job? They're going to say no anyway. Why go up to that nice girl that I met at the meeting or wherever I met her and ask her on a date? No, she's going to say no. I know she's going to say no. Everyone always says no. So we live with this delusion of impossibility. Why try for that promotion? It's just a negative self-talk that a lot of us, you know, sometimes we're not even aware that we're doing this. It's so ingrained in my DNA that I think like this at times. This is my isms, right? I don't even say it. And then I talked a little bit about this last one, you know, this spiritual disqualification. Why would God help a guy like me? I've been living my life like a pirate. I'm a thief. I've done so many bad things in my life. Why would God help a guy like me? And for me, that's rooted down in some like old religious idea that I had from the 1960s Catholic school religion. You're going to hell for everything you ever did. Right? Why would God help a guy like me? Well, why not? Why not? We've been given the grace of God. We've been given this gift called sobriety. Right? But see, the thing that blocks me from going out there into the world of freedom and being willing to do the work that we're talking about in here is this. This will talk me out of anything that's healthy for me. Hey, why don't you go on a retreat? Why? I know what they're like. I don't like they smoke too many cigars. You know, I'll give you a million and one excuses why I shouldn't be here this weekend. You guys probably sponsor guys that are not here this weekend that should be here this weekend. Right? So this is the culprit. This is the thing where my ism lies. And this is the thing that will always block me from God and block me from you. Right? And I'm so glad that I was brought into, you know, understanding that. And a lot of this is just rooted by these old ideas. You know, when this guy Peter was sponsoring me, you know, we went through the steps. And he goes, I want you to do an exercise that he got from his old sponsor, a guy by the name of Mark Houston. Some of you guys might have heard that guy's name around. He was a big speaker out on the circuit at one time, doing a lot of step work, a lot of workshops and stuff, and out of Austin, Texas. And Peter goes, I have this exercise I'd like you to try. It's called the Ideas, Emotions, and Attitudes. And if you turn to page 28 in the book, and you'll read that story about Roland Hazard, right? And Roland Hazard, an American businessman, you know, can't stop drinking. He lives in Vermont. You know, he goes to Europe to see Carl Jung, you know, for some help to get attuned up, as we say. So talk about any lengths. He got on a ship and went from America to Switzerland, gets treated by Carl Jung. They work on the triggers and all the things in his mind, you know, kind of cognitive behaviors, I guess. He gets back, he goes back towards the United States, stops in France. Guess what's in France? The thinking mind. The mind says, I never had French wine before. And he gets hammered in France, turns back, goes back to see Carl Jung. And as the book unlays the story, and he goes, is there any hope for a guy like me? And Carl Jung says to him, here and there, now, once in a while, and I'm paraphrasing, I've seen people have these vital spiritual experiences. Matter of fact, I've been trying to make you have one, but I've never been successful with an alcoholic of your type. And the gates of death, just the gates of doom, just clanged on Roland Hazard. But Jung goes on and says, you know, but here and there, once in a while, I've met people where these ideas, emotions, and attitudes, the guiding forces of their lives have been, you know, pushed to the side and be replaced with a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. And he started to apply these things. He started to set aside all the old ideas that he was being driven by. He started to get honest with himself. He started to search diligently, as he says. And the net result was he was able to find God and stay sober. And he came back to the United States. He opened up his farm to be an Oxford group community. And, you know, if you look at our history, we all think everything started with Bill and Bob. It goes way before Bill and Bob. You know, God was putting the pieces in place before Bill and Bob even met in that gatehouse. And all of a sudden, you know, here we are in Florida, sober, somewhat happy, I think, and living a dream, really, you know. So what are my old ideas? You know, how many times do you say to a newcomer, you meet him at your meeting, comes into the West Side Boys on a Wednesday or Thursday, whatever night you guys you meet, walks through the door, you grab him, you talk to him. Are you willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol? And their head's like a bobblehead doll. Yep. But we never explain, or sometimes we don't explain what any lengths really looks like, right? We do the same thing with the literature in our book. How many times in our literature, 14, 15, 22 times, does it beg us to lay aside our prejudice, our old ideas, not only towards God, but towards everything? Towards everything. So Peter gives me this exercise. He wants me to look at five areas of my life. And he wants me to ask myself a few questions. What are the old ideas that drive me in these five areas? So he wanted me to look at my health. He wanted me to look at my relationships. He wanted me to look at my work. He wanted me to look at my money. And he wanted me to look at Alcoholics Anonymous. And the question is, what are the old ideas that drive you in each area? And each statement starts with this thing, real man blank, fill in the blank. So we talked a little bit about that with money. Real men don't have debts. Real men are strong. Real men don't cry. All that kind of crap that we all walk around with. Stuff that's been probably put into most of us when we were little kids and we dragged it like a heavy anchor through the sand until our 50s, 60s, and we're like, what the hell's wrong with me, right? My life should look like this when it comes to money. My life should look like this when it comes to relationships. My money should look like this when it comes to, and the minute that stuff doesn't look the way I think it should look, that's the stuff that creates the conflict in my mind, which creates an attitude and creates an emotion. That's why I walk around a lot of times with the F it, right? F it. Screw it. It's not going to work. These delusions just take over. And all of a sudden, I'm not good enough. I'm this. I'm not. Right? I hope you're kind of with me right now. And what I had to really do was I had to start examining some of that stuff. Now, these old ideas, really, that are under the surface, like roots on a tree, I don't see it. I've been practicing this kind of thinking for 30 years. It isn't until I expose the roots that I start to see truth that that's bullshit. And not every old idea is a bad idea. But let me get down to causes and conditions of my alcoholism and take a look at some of this stuff. Let me shine a light on some of this stuff and see if it's really true. Does it really serve me well? Right? Real men are strong. Well, like I told you, I've had 41 operations in the last 21 years. I'm breaking down. I'm starting to get a little heavy. I'm starting to gain the 2 inches off my belt. Man, I used to pride myself in being in shape. You know why? Because if I was in shape, that was the lie I told myself. And guess what? Maybe I'm not that bad. I mean, I would do a gram of coke and go run 5 miles. I mean, that's how crazy I am, you know? it's a, it was shocking that I never had a heart attack running. Right? But these are the things that sound stupid and it sounds simplistic, but these are the things that drive me. So I do this exercise and there's two questions at the end of this exercise. One, am I willing to live on terms other than my own? Am I willing to live on terms other than my own? What does that mean? Am I willing to challenge my old ideas, my belief systems that I'm walking around with? And that might be in here for one of you with double-digit sobriety. What's not working in your life? What's preventing you from being really free out there in the sunlight of the spirit? If that's the goal, then what's stopping you from it, the goal? You know, this isn't about an academic exercise going through the steps. This is about a transformation. What are the things that I'm not willing to do? All right. And then the last question is, where is God in any of this stuff? And my drive for success, money, property, prestige, it's all self-imposed. It's all self-reliant. Right? It's all about me on me. And there is no God in that. So I go through the steps and I go through this stuff and I clean up my mess. And like I said, I have won amends lately and I feel free. I feel free. I think I'm as free as I've ever been right now, standing here on a Saturday afternoon in Florida. Do I have troubles? Yeah, I have troubles. There's always something going on. But I got a God in my life. I got you in my life. I got a sponsor in my life. I got a home group in my life. I got the 12 steps. I got a recovered wife herself. I got friends that I can rely on. I got a life that's beyond my wildest dreams. We hear that in here all the time. But I know how easy it is to get diverted, right? And I know everyone in this room will go to a meeting. You guys probably got your home group, right? I'm sure you got the shades on the wall. Most meetings do have the shades on the wall. You know, you walk into a meeting hall in a church basement. You read the steps. You see the 10th step. Continue to take personal inventory. When I'm wrong, promptly admit it, right? Sounds like, we just, come upon a hard time, maybe a problem in my life, click my heels, maybe talk to my sponsor about it, maybe even, maybe write inventory on it, right? Nothing further from the truth when you read our literature. Our literature says we've entered the world of the spirit. We've had a spiritual experience. And I have to ask myself, have I? Have I really had a spiritual experience? Has my viewpoints changed on some of the things in my life? Right? And what's the language that we use to know if we're in the sunlight of the spirit? There's a lot of inventories in this literature of ours. We talk about the fourth step all the time. We talk about the 10-step spot check inventory. We talk about the 11-step eating review. You take those three questions I started this whole thing off with, and I could use that as an inventory. I could take every sentence in a big book and turn it into a question and ask myself, where am I with this? I could take all the promises, right? We think there's only 12 promises after the 9th step. There's 225 promises in our literature, right? But what's the language of the world of the spirit? What's the language of freedom? What's the language of being out there free as a bird, right? And I'm going to use the 12 promises after the 9th step, right? So this becomes the test, right? What time do I go to? 4:15. So this is the language. This is the way we should be living in the world of the spirit. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking slip away. Has it? Everyone has an opportunity to pull out your spiritual mirror right now. Where do you stand with this? This is group participation. Everyone could just ask yourself that question. Has that really happened in my life? I will comprehend the world's serenity and I will know peace. Do I? Or is the squirrel still running around in my head all day long? A whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Has it? Or does life suck? Or a veil of tears? Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. Has it? I got to walk in to see that boss on Monday. Man, I got all that financial crap going on in my life. That feelings of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Nobody asked me to sponsor him. Why doesn't anybody ask me to sponsor him? We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will know a new freedom and a new happiness, do I? Or am I twisted up all the time? No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience could benefit others. We will not regret the past and will wish to shut the door on it. So is that really going on in my life right now? And then finally, the key to the door, to the freedom is that we understand this to our soul, that God is doing for us what we can never do for ourselves. AA is not self-help. It's God-reliance. So I understand that, that I can't get my way out of this box without God's help, that I need the grace of God to work in my life. So if that's not going on, is it possible? Is it possible? This is another consideration. Is it possible that I need to go through the steps again? I went through the steps 3 years ago, but is it possible that maybe I just need to go through the steps again one more time, have a new experience? Right? Like I said yesterday, I can't stay full on last week's meal. Do I need a new experience with the steps? Is it possible that I need to stop playing God in my life and trying to control and manage, maybe in my relationships with my wife and the kids, or maybe on the job, or whatever the case may be? Maybe is it possible that I need to get out of the director's chair and allow God to be back in the director's chair? You know, is it possible that I need to finish that inventory that my sponsor's size 12 boot has been up my ass about getting done? Maybe it's the time to start finishing that inventory that I've been procrastinating on for whatever reason. Is it possible that I need to start finishing the amends, those unfinished amends that I have sitting on my front desk, on my credit, on the cards, or whatever way you fashion that you do that, right? What's blocking me from finishing? Let me ask you a question. Does not finishing the amends ever have to have anything to do with you drinking again? Right? But most important, is it possible that I need to share that secret that I'm walking around with? Do I really believe I'm going to walk out there in the sunlight of the Spirit with a secret in my back pocket? And I'm not saying, you know, ante up here on this weekend. I'm just saying maybe I need to start thinking about talking about more on a different level and not such a surface level of the things that are going on in my life to be really free. I heard some of that at out my round table. I heard that. And I'm not all there sometimes, and I got to talk about stuff. I have to talk to my sponsor about. Sam Shoemaker runs the Calvary Church in New York City. It's where the Oxford Group was, and he was part of the Oxford Group. And he was a very influential guy for Bill Wilson. He helped Bill write the 12 steps, you know. He wrote a ton of spiritual literature about, you know, just what we do, basically. You know, he just wasn't a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came across this writing that it was adapted from all his writings. They put it together, and it's called The Four Roadblocks to the Sunlight of the Spirit. So number one, is there a person, an institution, or a principle I won't forgive, be reconciled with, or accept? Is there a person, institution, or principle I won't forgive? You know, I'm still playing a role of the victim. I can't let him off the hook. Can't let my old man off the hook. Can't let her off the hook. I can't let those people off the hook. What a principle. What's the principles? The resentments I have towards, you know, maybe the Ten Commandments, maybe any guidelines, maybe morals or values, or all that kind of stuff. Other things I'm just not willing to let go, thinking that I can be a free man, meanwhile still holding on to this. Number two, is there a restitution I will not make or yet haven't made? And again, what's the fear? Because it's only fear that blocks me from making amends. It's not the money. I got the money. And if I don't have the money, you make the best financial arrangement possible. It always works out, right? So what's blocking me from that? Number three, is there a defect of character, personal shortcoming, or doubtful pleasure that I won't give up? Well, you know, I like that porn. Yeah, I like that porn. Porn's serving me purpose, I think. Right? Sandy Beach said it once. Great. I love it. I love what Sandy said. He goes, well, you know, if you want to go on porn, and I'm not here to judge anyone who's on porn. I'm just saying what Sandy said was, you know, when you're about to close that door and you're going to go in your room and pop on the computer, just invite God in with you. That makes that session a little bit different. Right? And then finally, and not only that, I just broke porn up. I mean, maybe it's still a gambling. Maybe I'm like, but on every break, I'm running down to the casino. Who knows? I mean, well, we go on all sorts of sprees, right? And then the fourth thing is, there's something from my past I've held back when taking inventory and sharing for confession. And I talked about, you know, that indictment I got. I was ashamed like, man, I have felt so much guilt over that, so much shame over that. And, you know, someone talked about it in our group until I shared it with somebody, until I got it out of here and gave it to you to talk about. Man, not that I took the actions immediately, but man, I felt the weight off my shoulders when I was able to share that problem, right? So again, you know, Shoemaker brings this, you know, again, brings this to us, you know, and so I have to ask myself, I'll even leave this up here. You guys want to take a picture of this too? You know, it's like a photo session with all this stuff up here, you know? But set 10 is about living in the world of the spirit. And the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12 is to stay out in the sunlight of the spirit. Now, hey, we're all human beings on a spiritual walk. We're going to lose focus of the walk. And our humanists, we're going to screw up spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection, the biggest cop-out line in the world. I'm not even trying. But the truth of the matter is, as easy it is to get out in the light, it's really easy to come back into the dark. And sometimes I got one foot in the light and one foot in the dark. But guess what? Nothing grows in the dark. So what I need to always, always, always be mindful of, and I wish I could tell you standing up here that I do this 100%, which is a lie. I don't. But I'm willing to try. And sometimes it means I got to go through a lot of pain before I'm willing to try. Right? Pain becomes the great touchstone or whatever that statement is. Right? So I need to be willing to try. And I need to be willing to go into that. Bill writes in the 12 and 12 about step 10. He goes, this is the acid test, right? Every one of us is going to go through something. Every one of us on a daily basis is dealing with something. Every day there's something that we have to deal with. And the acid test is, you know, there's three things he talks about. Can I stay sober? Can I stay in emotional balance? And can I live to good purpose when the heavy artillery is coming at me? You know, I imagine, like, you know, you see these little Olympic gymnast girls, right? They're on that beam, right? That beam is like, I don't know, 20 feet long, maybe 4 inches wide. They're doing flips and cartwheels and all sorts of shit up there that I could never do, right? But they're balanced on that beam, right? Well, that's what they're asking us. Can we stay balanced on that beam when life's adversities come? When we're dealing with problems at home, when we're dealing with money problems, job problems, or whatever the problem is. You know, we have a lot of problems. You know why? Because we're problem people. That's why. That's what Bill wrote. That's all been solved. We have problems, but we also have tools too. So can I stay on that emotional beam and experience what Bill talks about? Because a lot of us walk in here like a pendulum, right? One day I love her, one day I hate her. One day I love my job, one day I hate my job. And the idea of the process of the 12 steps is to get that pendulum from stop swinging so far to a place where there's going to be wiggle room because that's life, but it's a place where Bill Wilson talks about the perfect place. It's being right-sized. And it's in that right sizes we get to experience the gift of all gifts. It's called emotional sobriety, emotional maturity, right? And what Bill found out in that great essay that he wrote in the Grapevine about emotional sobriety, that his dependence was always on people and circumstances to make him feel good. And what he found out, none of that works with guys like us, that my dependence always has to be on God. And when I started to understand that and started to apply that to my life, I was able to stand on the beam. Whether it was that accident I was in, whether it was the death of my parents, whether it was whatever it was, you know what? It's like getting hit, like, you know, like in a boxing ring, you get hit, right? Boom, you know, but you don't go down. All right, I took a hit and I'm good. I'm still on that beam. I'm still sober. I'm still experiencing emotional balance. And matter of fact, my dark past becomes the greatest asset I have because I'm going to sit down with some little knucklehead someday and talk about ripping off unemployment, talk about being in accidents, talk about infidelity. And believe it or not, that sad crap becomes our greatest asset because we can help others stay sober when they're doing the same goddamn things. What a gift we have. Buddy Tommy always says it, the unfair advantage that we walk around with. Right? That doesn't make work better than anyone. It's just that we have this toolbox that's been set at our feet. The real hard job is bending down and picking up the spiritual tools and applying it to your life. And when I do that, guess what? I got a pretty good day going on, right? We live one day at a moment, one day at a time, but, you know, I apply these spiritual principles and I'm good to go. You know, And I'm going to talk about this tomorrow. This will wrap it up. It's really about, you know, the 10th step talks about growing in understanding and effectiveness. Learning more about me. Not that this is about learning, but understanding me more, understanding God more. But more importantly, the effectiveness of bringing us out into the world and practicing these principles in all our affairs. Because everything I'm doing this weekend and everything I'm trying to do, and hopefully maybe you guys will be doing, is to come to the realization that this is about one thing and one thing only. Less Jimmy, more God. Less Jimmy, more God. What a lesson to learn. What a hard lesson to learn, you know? But that's why we're sitting here today, to remind ourselves that, you know what? I got work to do. This is not a free ride. In fact, I'm 38 years and change sober. That doesn't impress anyone, really. You know, I get my little grapevine app today, right? Boom, 14,115 days. Well, guess what, newcomer or guy with 3 days? No different than you. It's all been done one day at a time. And, you know, that's the gift of sobriety, that we do this one day at a time, that this doesn't have to be all accomplished tonight. Right? So I think that brings me to the 4:15 hour. So thanks a lot, guys.